This yours? You're staying there.
Okay. And this really draws the crowd.
Well, I don't know. It always starts different on Saturdays than it does on Fridays. Okay. This morning, like I said earlier, we're going to start with learning about the forest industries from sort of from the ground up, literally. And if I had a tract of land that I wanted to maybe plant and have trees being a crop that takes 30 years instead of 6 months to grow, I need to do things to that land in order to produce top-notch trees. And I might rely on people such as Don Lewis, or John, or Mr. Buckles here at the end over there, and Marvin Buchanan, all who are involved with an aspect of the forest industries called land management. Land management's a rather large umbrella kind of term. What I'm going to do is ask, let's see, I can pick in this line here. I'm going to ask Don to explain what exactly is land management in 25 words or more.
In 25 words or more. Probably should have asked one of my other colleagues on the panel to answer that question better than I, but I'll give it a stab and maybe they can pick up. Land management is simply, as the name implies, the type of management practices that you're going to apply to your land to achieve the goals that you have set for that land, whatever that goal might be it timber production, wildlife, aesthetics. Of course, we also have to take into account water, soil, all of those aspects. And it just depends, you know, what type of cultural practices that you want to apply to the forest. I would like to say one thing other too because you mentioned it before we get off of it. I was glad to hear you refer to trees as a crop because, in my opinion, many times a lot of people don't understand that's, you know, and simply in a nutshell, what we are doing is we're growing a crop just like a farmer would. Mm-hmm. So, and we have to do certain practices.
Let's pretend that I bought a tract of land and it had a lot of kind of brush and trees and junk on it, and I wanted to grow trees that would produce timber to build houses. How would I go about doing that? Wouldn't I have to do something first to the land in order to even get this, even before I began dropping any tree seeds? Well, John, what would I do?
One of the tools that we utilize frequently to prepare the land to plant trees is fire, just because when we're able to utilize fire, it is one of the cheapest, most economical ways to reduce the amount of brush and reduce the competition on the site. But each individual situation requires a different type of treatment. We like to sometimes disc land and chop land, and what we're trying to do is reduce the gallberry, palmetto, oak, whatever type of competition we're dealing with, so that more of the nutrients and more of the sunlight can go directly into the growth of the pines. So depending upon what type of planting practice, if you're going to machine plant, you have to generally have a more intense site preparation. Mm-hmm. Hand planting has become more popular in more recent years, and a hand planter can go across a rougher site and doesn't need quite a smooth a condition if you're not worried about the competition.
Okay, so would that mean I could go in with a pack of matches and a hatchet? Or do I have to use particular kinds of equipment to actually prepare the land?
Yeah, more and more nowadays you want to be more and more careful. The that was done, I'm sure. But there's a lot of things you have to do to, for example, to prescribe burn some property. You usually have to establish fire breaks to contain the fire within the area that you want to burn. And you also have to have equipment handy because almost inevitably, as well as you plan, the possibility at least exists for a spot over. And it's frequently not a big deal, but you have the equipment there to control it when it happens.
Well, I know, you know, in older times, I'm sure that they, you know, actually did kind of use those sorts of methods.
That's called the blue tip special.
Blue tip special. Just, right.
All you need is a pack
right.
of blue.
The Ohio blue tip special. That's right. Okay, so we've set fire. We've cleaned it up. Now the next thing we've got to do is, I guess, get some seeds in order to do that. So, Mr. Buchanan, could you talk about that aspect? What kinds of seeds are there? They come in little paper packages, or they trees well, 6 feet tall, or what?
Burpees and get them, do you?
No.
Burpees trees.
There are some seeds that they're direct seeding. There are some sites that require direct seeding because they're so rough, even after you burn and chop hair or whatever, that you do some direct seeding. We didn't mention that before, but some sites require that, and seeds can be bought from several sources. Contact your local consulting forester, and he'll put you in touch with someone that can supply those seeds. But primarily, the way we reestablish forests in this area is through planting. The seeds are put into a nursery setting and grown 1 year. And after that, they're removed and delivered to the fields and to the sites and planted. The particular species is selected based on the site that's best suited for that species. There's many means then of planting. There's, as you mentioned earlier, the hand planting, the slit planting with a tree planter. And there are several different techniques, different densities, different species, and there's lots of things that's involved. If a person were to get to that stage, most of this would already be determined. I think that the land management plan would entail all of these facets that are being mentioned here. I think in the very beginning, you would start with a reliable consultant, reliable land manager, land management firm, and go with them with their recommendations. And that's basically what John does here for a living. He'll go out and start from scratch and run all the way through and hold your hand completely through the operation.
After, so are the plants now, they're a year, so about a year old once you get to planting them. How tall are they at that time?
They're about 12 to 16 inches, thereabouts. It varies according to the season, too.
What's the best time to plant?
Almost inevitably, the best time is in the winter, the dormant season, when they're sitting there not requiring a lot of nutrients, not a lot of activity. They can tolerate a little bit of transplant shock at that time. There's been some experimenting done planting at different times of the year, but the success tails off drastically as you leave winter. There's also a new product available. It's relatively new. It's containerized seedlings that allows a person, it just broadens the window of planting time, allows a person to plant during the winter months, summer months, particularly during the rainy season. These plants can be transplanted. They're real small containerized trees.
Are trees ever grafted?
Yes, but primarily they're grafted as a means of improvement, a genetically improvement activity.
Okay. We got the seeds in now. Then we got, do you just wait, sit back and wait 30 years, Mr. Buckles, or do you have something in particular that you need to keep an eye on, at least for the time you're going to be with those trees?
Well, one thing you have to worry about is fire. Most of the time, your trees, until they get up of merciful size, are very vulnerable to fire, even after merciful size with a bad fire. But until they are merciful, if they burn up, you got a terrible loss right there.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we need to remember, trees are renewable resources. You don't have too many of those around.
Right.
And we can cut it down, we can replant it, and we can start all over again. But besides fire, you do have disease, insects. I think up in the Carolinas, they got a beetle infestation now that's ravaging a lot of their forests up there. Mm-hmm. Down our way several years ago, we had a pitch canker infestation. Got in. And I don't know, did they ever really figure out what that was from, what caused,
what they could do for it?
Or it just seemed like for a couple of years it went in and got right in the top of the bud and
make pulp out of it.
Yeah, eventually killed the tree. But then I noticed in the last several years you don't see as much of it. They were just about 3 or 4 years there that was, it just ravaged everything in our area.
Mm-hmm.
But other than, and that's, there's some companies that does some fertilization of their young trees.
Hmm.
But that could be quite expensive too. You have to weigh the economics against the cost on that to see whether it's will do. Some soils need a little fertilization, and some just naturally take off and go.
So,
but mostly you just sit there and watch them. Just trying to take care of the little fellows.
Is there any particular time that you'd say, like, you know, inspect them more than at other times?
Well, I think most of us, as being woods people, we drive through the woods, and as you're riding through, you mm-hmm. observe them. You don't mm-hmm. really get out and look at them that close. You can usually tell when something is beginning to happen to your forest
mm-hmm.
by just observing it mm-hmm. and riding through.
Yeah, John, what's a typical day for you like?
A typical day for me usually entails either cruising timber or possibly marking timber. Cruising timber, of course, we're going to dwell in a little bit mm-hmm. more detail in a minute, but that's taking statistical samples of the tracts of timber in order to estimate the total volume that's out there. But when I'm marking timber, that's really one of the more enjoyable things, I think, for a professional forester. You, especially not so much plantation marking, that's pretty mundane, but when you're marking natural stands, you're usually doing either a thinning harvest or a seed tree harvest, and you indicate which trees are going to be removed by painting them, or sometimes the reverse case, you indicate which trees are going to be left by painting them, you estimate the volume of those trees frequently at the same time. Every 10th tree you mark, you might tally and record a height and a diameter to get an estimate of your volume.
Mm-hmm.
But my particular job, I'm happy to say, has a lot of field work involved still mm-hmm. at this point. Mm-hmm. And though we do get into writing management plans and financial analyses and different things like that.
So it's sort of, your day is really a balance of forester and business.
Very much so.
Business person, right. What I'd like to do, if anybody has any questions that they'd like to ask, you know, you're more than welcome, and if not,
let me backtrack just
right.
a minute on. I don't want to leave the impression and we sort of stick them in the ground and just necessarily just leave them.
Right.
That
okay.
In some cases, in some situations, that is indeed the case, but. John just mentioned, and I maybe want to just dwell on it a little bit longer, that there are some instances where we do carry on silvicultural practices called thinnings in the rotation period, and these would occur at different time periods. It depends upon your site quality, the site where the trees are planted. Again, something I keep coming back to, but what are your goals or your objectives for the long term? What kind of products are you trying to grow, or what are you actually why do you have the trees out there? So it's not necessarily always just to plant them and forget it, except for an occasional burn situation, because we do have different types of thinnings. John said it can be pretty mundane in the plantations, and that's true when you're marking for what we call a mechanical or a row thin, where you would take out every third, fifth row. Everyone has their preferences as to how you should thin, and a lot of times we like to come in and take out every sixth row, and that would leave five, and then you come in and would take out the middle row of them and selective thin in between those rows. But there are a lot of variables that go into that.
Okay. Yeah, it would seem, I know when I've driven along, and there's one way I can always see a managed area of land is the trees are actually in rows. You can literally look down the road and see light. You know, like say with a crop, like with furrows and the like. What I'd like to do is to actually just go down the line and find out from each of you how you got involved in your work and why. And let me start with Mr. Buchanan this time.
Well, I actually got started in forestry as a sort of a spinoff at working with Buckeye Cellulose Corporation in Perry. I was in industrial engineering inside the mill for 4 years and really didn't have a lot of yearning for going inside the mill and operating in there. Had an opportunity to get involved in wood procurement as a timber buyer and really grew to love the timber industry. It's a real congenial group of people. Mm-hmm. There's hardly anybody that's after anybody else's throat. We all seem to get along real well. There's it just sort of grew from that. I worked with Buckeye for 15 years in land management and timber acquisition. I was an area manager for them for the last 4 years there, and got an opportunity to start my own business, and got involved with a partner who had been with Buckeye for 22 years, Jimmy Mincy, and we set up a company called Central Florida Lands and Timber. The primary objective was to be a timber dealership, and a lot of things spawned off of that. We became land managers, consulting foresters, most all of those things. But we learned very quickly that there were experts in all of those different fields, and that we relied heavily on them to help us do the particular things that we needed doing. We more or less broker those services. If we need a management plan written, we would call John. If we needed some technical advice, we would call Don. If we needed a tract of timber harvested, we would call Victor. We more or less put the landowner in touch with the total concept through our affiliation and knowledge of what all's going on. It's a great business, a great field. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of things that still needs to be learned, and it needs to be assimilated and published. And one of the greatest things that we're lacking in now is knowledge of the general public having knowledge that we are the good guys. We're out there to help them rather than ravage their forests.
Sure, sure. What about you, Mr. Buckles? Your story's a little different.
Well, I guess being raised in the country, and I had an opportunity to go to work with a large landowner, and I just kind of fell in it, more or less. It's something I enjoy doing, sort of a freedom on your own, no income most of the time.
That
you
really
do have to answer to somebody occasionally, yeah. But mostly it's just the love of the woods.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about you, John?
I think I would stress the same point. I enjoyed being outdoors so much that I always looked towards careers that had that opportunity. And I also enjoyed science to a great degree, and forestry, its basic curriculum is very heavy in science, mm-hmm. and the life sciences and whatnot, and so the two seem to mesh together. And I've been fortunate enough to have some job opportunities, first with the state and now with a consulting firm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Don?
Well, I guess I was basically raised as a city slicker, although I lived in, was born and raised on the outskirts of Jacksonville. It was kind of in the boonies at that time. It's very grown up and developed now where I grew up. But I guess to a lot of people, I was considered a city slicker. But I did. I developed an early love for the outdoors, hunting and fishing, and just sort of developed through high school. It was a sort of a weird tack because in my schooling, I was in music and always thought that I would end up in music, had scholarships in music, and instead I because of my love for the outdoors, I chose to go to Lake City to the school where I'm now the director, and then I worked for several years after I graduated there as a technician with a large concern in Palatka, which was Hudson Pulp and Paper at that time. It's now Georgia Pacific, in wood procurement, buying cruising marking timber. Then I returned back to the University of Florida, got my degree in forestry, mm-hmm. and it's just, it's an extremely noble profession, and something Marvin said, it's a comment I always use, but the people that you work with are salt of the, I mean, it's the greatest group of people, I think, that you could ever be associated with. They're good people, they're hardworking people, they're honest people, you can trust them, and it's just, again, maybe an overused cliche, but being a steward of the land, mm-hmm. You know, knowing that we're helping for generations to come, something that I never can understand when we come under attack is if you knew how much we all loved what we do and where we work and the forest and the woods, it'd be ludicrous, ridiculous, and several other adjectives for us to go out there and mess up this this place and thing that we love. We'd be cutting off the hand that feeds us, so to speak. So it's just it's just a great profession, and we need more people.
Don't you think that idea came from back years ago when the early settlers came in and just cut everything there was and moved on?
Yes,
and,
sir.
And
we've had some black eyes, that's for sure.
We're still stuck with it.
And I don't think we've told our story enough, several of you have indicated that Marvin or somebody said we're the good guys, and somehow that's been distorted around.
Yeah.
And,
Over the years, I think we had a reputation.
Right. I think it'd just be ridiculous. I mean, we'd be cutting off our nose to spite our face. Yeah.
Well, I think throughout the course of the next 2 days, we're going to help at least dispel some of the falsehoods of the industry. I know that happens in a lot of occupations, too, that people, you know, there's the black hats and the white hats sort of thing, and people get the two kind of confused. So what we're going to do now is going to take a couple minutes and set up for the next workshop, because now what we've done is we've learned that there's a way to prepare the land and to plant it. Now we've got to figure out what exactly we're going to harvest. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes with another workshop to talk about how to estimate and see just what it is you're supposed to cut and maybe what you're not supposed to cut. So thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks. Thank you.